Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The steal by Iverson, posting in! He won the game! He won the game!
Be there to say absolutely no!
Three from Scott. Yeah! Do you love this game?
What's up, Sixers fans? This is Sixers Talk presented to you by Wilmington University. I'm Ben Berry, joined by the one and only Noah Levick. Noah, thanks for joining the pod today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, though.
So the Sixers just finished up this four-game road trip. Last week, Danny thought they would go 4-0 on the road trip. Clearly, that didn't happen. I was hoping for 3-1. I thought anything less would be very disappointing. Before we get into all that, the last game of the road trip ended in a loss, but we've seen something from Ben Simmons we've all wanted to see for years, since day one. He was aggressive from tip-off to the end of the game. 19 points in the first quarter, 42 points overall. What was the positives? What did you see from Ben last night? Why was he aggressive?
Yeah, he was special. I think a lot of it does come down to the fact that Joel Embiid was a very late scratch for this game with back tightness. So the Sixers went small instead of, you know, what they'd done last time in this situation, which was start Tony Bradley and play a little more conventionally and kind of use these small ball lineups only in spurts. Doc Rivers went to it from the beginning of the game with the aim of matching Simmons up against Rudy Gobert, and credit to him because that looked brilliant early. I mean, so many positives when you're, when you almost have a 42 point triple double. I think, yeah, the aggression first and foremost stands out. Just the fact that even after that brilliant first quarter, you know, he didn't necessarily maintain the unsustainable efficiency, but he continued attacking the rim, driving into and past Gobert, kicking out to his shooters, and just looked, frankly, brilliant in all phases offensively. And one aspect of that is something we did see a lot last season under Brett Brown, when he put Simmons at, you know, quote unquote point forward, which was the screening and rolling. I mean, he looks awfully dangerous really in any setting when he's getting downhill, including screening and rolling. You know, he's a physical screen setter, builds a lot of momentum when he's rolling hard toward the rim. And he looked fantastic last night. It was interesting. You know, he said he loved when he saw Gobert was on him, and he took that as a little bit of disrespect, I guess, that the opposition thought it would be tenable to put a setter on him, because obviously there's just a massive speed and athleticism disparity there. And I think, you know, though he didn't directly say it, look, Rudy Gobert is going to be a contender yet again for Defensive Player of the Year. That's an award Ben Simmons thinks he should be winning. And he showed at least that Rudy Gobert is not anywhere near him as far as defensive versatility. Like Rudy Gobert can knock guard one of the fastest players in the league and one of the most versatile players in the league. And Ben Simmons looked like both of those things last night. So yeah, certainly some negatives that I'm sure we'll touch on from the loss, but hard to find any in Ben Simmons's individual performance.
I love everything you said. One thing you left out was Ben's improvement from the free throw line, at least for one game. He looked like he wanted to get there. He attacked the rim, no matter if it was Rudy or whoever. And when he went to the foul line, he was knocking down the shots. And that's a sigh of relief for crunch time, clutch minutes, that you don't have to worry about, oh, we can't – don't pass it to Ben because he's going to end up at the line. So I was – enthralled. I was completely happy from what I saw from Ben Simmons last night, from beginning to end of the game, and the whole Rudy Gobert thing. He definitely took that personal. He kind of scoffed at it, and he wanted to put Rudy in the league on notice, like, no, I guard 1 through 5. Rudy can't guard me. Why is he above me for defensive player of the year?
Exactly. Yeah, he talked with the free throw shooting, the 12 for 13 performance, that his mentality has changed over the past few weeks, which I think was interesting just because he wasn't specifically asked about that. He was kind of asked generally, you know, you did a really good job drawing contact and making free throws. You look really aggressive tonight. And he attributed a lot of that to a shift in his mental game, which I thought was a rather mature admission, like that, look, he needed to in some ways change the way he approached the game. And he acknowledged that that's a process, that he needs to remain diligent about doing things that are maybe outside of his comfort zone offensively. He's, again, at a career best mark from the foul line if the season were to end today. So he continues to make strides there. They might not be super dramatic, but the fact that he keeps trending upward in terms of his free throw shooting is really important, as you say, in the big picture for the Sixers, that you can feel comfortable with him on the floor, getting fouled late in games. Certainly a huge positive there.
Ben wasn't the only player to step up in the absence of Joel and be a guy that I've given a hard time. You've been on the pod when I've apologized to him. Tobias Harris, a big 36.10 rebounds. He showed up. He wasn't the problem. Neither was Ben. We'll get to the bench and the lack of threes. But Tobias had he filled in the role of getting more buckets, scoring more, being more decisive, leading without Joel out there on the floor.
Absolutely. Yeah, he said, on this team, on a typical night, they don't, you know, I'm not usually required to shoot 24 times, and that's perfectly okay with me. He's, I think, made it very clear in his time here that he's a team-oriented person. He wants to fill the best role, and credit to him, as you said, for recognizing that the best role for him last night was being aggressive offensively and looking to attack. So did that really well. And Doc Rivers, again, reiterated a lot of the qualities that have made Harris successful, you know, contributed to that in terms of simplicity in his decision-making, you know, being attack-minded and just really decisive in his approach. So yeah, certainly those were by far the two standouts for the Sixers. And again, Harris continues to maintain this really impressive efficiency and seems to have a legit shot at a 50-40-90 season. So it's going to be really difficult for him to make the All-Star game. It looks like in the East this year, there are a ton of strong contenders for spots, but he's not fading away from that discussion.
So before we wrap up, it was just, I love to see the aggressiveness from Tobias and Ben. This is all the positives from last night game and maybe the last couple. It was nice. Why don't we see that when Joel's also there? Like, what happens? I know it's only so many shots to be put up, but it seems very rare that we get all three playing the best they can play if they're in the game at the same time.
Yeah, to be fair, I believe it was the Phoenix game. They combined for 71 points on, I think, like 41 shots. So, you're right, though. I guess that's an outlier. I guess it's a lot of it just comes down to the offense is quite logically centered around Joel in the half court and in transition. Ben kicking out the shooters are the areas of focus. You'd like to see them developing as a trio over time. But, you know, recently, I mean, those guys combining for 70 points, I think in most cases you'll take that. It's just it didn't happen in a win because they didn't receive enough support from the other players on the team, and the defense just did not get enough stops.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You just mentioned it. When those three have played well in Phoenix, and we saw it against the Jazz as well, it's been a roller coaster of a ride all season from the Sixers bench. It's very up and down. Jordan Clarkson had 40 off the bench for the Jazz, and the Sixers bench was kind of missing. What's going on there?
Well, you give Dwight Howard a shout out for playing well, and unfortunately, yeah, Doc Rivers told us that Howard had a death in the family. He wasn't sure that he was going to play. So Rivers and Howard's teammates were appreciative of the fact that he played with a heavy heart and on the court played really well, 14 points, 12 rebounds. Yeah, outside of that, though, over the last three games, they've been outscored by 87 points, which is a mind-boggling disparity. That's pretty just atrocious. Part of it is Shake Milton's absence. He's missed these last three with a left ankle sprain, and I think it's become more and more obvious that they're very dependent on him for half-court shot creation. Outside of him, you are relying a lot on 20-year-old Tyrese Maxey, and I don't think that's a great formula despite the flashes we've seen from Maxey and the promise that he has. Something that Rivers was pretty frank about on this road trip is that the bench as it stands just does not have a true point guard, which sure seems notable ahead of the trade deadline and perhaps an area that they'd want to address. It's a lot of guys trying to generate their own offense, and he says when they're not doing well, the ball kind of sticks and there's just not sufficient movement to produce great looks. I think on top of that, as you note, 40 from Jordan Clarkson, the bench and the team as a whole just has been below their normal standard defensively, and that exacerbates the offensive issues, and that's how you get these situations where they're being outscored by 32 points last night. So, you know, something Rivers has said that I think is a valid point is you're not playing like four or five bench players at a time in the postseason. So that's a reason that he insists that he's not incredibly concerned, but I think some level of concern at this point is most definitely reasonable. But how do you see it, Ben?
It's a concern for me. Furkan has been ice cold. It goes back to a discussion me and Danny had last week about a possibility of a J.J. Redick reunion if he's bought out, if he's on the market. Danny didn't like the idea because he thought that we had people to fill that position, and Danny Green, Seth Curry, to Furkan. I'm a believer you can never have enough firepower. Last night in this four-game road trip isn't a reason example on why you need more firepower. The backup point guard, I see not major holes, but holes that it should be a concern because if you get to the postseason, and what if Ben gets in foul trouble? Shake is a phenomenal player. I've seen what it looks like when he runs the point guard where he has to create for other people instead of run the offense. It puts a disservice to him and the rest of the team if that's what his main role is going to be if Ben gets in trouble. I like Tyrese Maxey a lot. A lot of flashes. But, again, he's a rookie, a 20-year-old rookie. I don't know. He's a kid. Like, it'd be completely unfair to expect big minutes from him in playoffs and crunch time minutes. So that's why I would keep my eyes open. Trade deadline, waiver wire. I would like another guy that can create his own shot. Whether he most likely coming off the bench, but if it's a starter, great. I think having another guy that can create his own shot would be very helpful for this team right now.
Sure, yeah. And the other, I think, potential area of need that we've seen throughout the season is upgrading the Mike Scott position, the backup 4 or 5, someone that can slot in. Although perhaps if Ben Simmons becomes this brilliant small ball 5, do everything in these mini lineups when Embiid is off the floor guy, then that's a little bit less of a need. But absolutely, I mean, as I'm sure we'll touch on, the three-point volume has just been abysmally low. So whether that's in the form of a power forward, in the form of a wing, in the form of a true point guard who can set up shooters, seems like something that they should be trying to address before March 25th, the way that I see it. So, it'll be really interesting to see exactly what form that takes. Despite these recent struggles, they are still first in the Eastern Conference. It's not as if there's a need to panic, but I think being realistic about, you know, is this team well positioned to win the Eastern Conference, there are upgrades that most likely can be made to at least put them in a better spot, you know, to give them a better chance of playoff success. And this does not look like a playoff bench. Now, are there a few reliable players on the bench? I think so. I think Shake Milton would certainly qualify. I think Dwight Howard, in certain situations, you'd feel comfortable using him, made valuable contributions to a championship-winning team last year. Foot speed and his game against more agile centers is not a strength, but he can give you some minutes. Matisse Thybulle is, of course, brilliant defensively and can take you know, some minutes against the opponent's top player, whatever. But it doesn't seem like a contender's bench as things currently sit. I think that's an understatement, as we said, after being outscored by nearly 90 points over the last 3 games. That's just not something that should ever happen for a good team's bench, even if they're missing their best bench player in Milton. So
I completely agree. And something you noted that we won't get into, we won't do it right now. This 3-point discrepancy.
Yeah.
It's not fun. Even though Ben had, 21 at halftime? Tobias had 18. They only made 3 3-pointers. They only took 6 3-pointers by the time they got to halftime. They made 8 overall against the Jazz, while the Jazz were 18 of 45.
That's right, yeah.
I know they're on pace to have the least amount of 3-point attempts since, the 2017-2018 season. I know every year there's more and more threes being shot, and you don't need to be shooting them if you can't make them, but the Sixers need to shoot them, and they need to make them. It does not leave the best taste in my mouth.
They need to be shooting a lot more threes, no doubt. Tobias Harris, he asked about this issue. He somewhat qualified it by saying basically the priority is to shoot high quality looks, and the aim is to produce more open threes. Doc Rivers talked about a lot of their 3-point shooting stems from their defense. So when they're not defending well and able to get open floor opportunities, that tends to limit their quality 3-point shots. But all of that said, they've got to collectively find a way to shoot more threes. That they haven't taken 30-plus threes in a game for over a month, which is pretty staggering, as you said, in the modern NBA, where 30-plus threes a night is the norm for most teams, such as the Jazz, the best team in the West. And I think it's notable, too, that they seem really dependent on Ben Simmons creating 3-point shots for other guys. Obviously, he's not shooting threes himself yet at anything close to a regular rate, but looking at it this morning, he has assisted on 38.6% of the Sixers' made threes, which is an incredibly high number and indicative of the fact that they don't have a lot of players who are creating threes for themselves, and they don't have other guys facilitating threes for their teammates. So I think that is concerning, and they just need to get more threes up is the bottom line. And part of that perhaps can be addressed through changes in personnel, but I think a lot of it at this point has to be philosophical. There has to be some sort of shift in how they think about this issue. I certainly understand Doc Rivers' perspective of not wanting to force things or to deviate too far from the flow of natural offense. I think that's all well and good. But this is pretty extreme what we're seeing. And it's also super uncharacteristic for a Daryl Morey team. You know, he said before the season, I don't need to clone what I did with the Rockets, you know, when our team was leading the league in 3-point attempts year after year. But I don't think it's a great formula to be dead last in that category in the NBA over the last month.
Yeah, who would have thought they would have been dead last at any point in the season coming in? I remember when he joined the Sixers, we did emergency pod. I was excited. I knew a lot of things were changing. He's done an incredible job. It seems like the culture is changing, putting players that complement Ben and Joel's strengths around a lot more. It seems like there's more accountability so far this year. I would have never thought they'd shoot less three-pointers and a recent low at this current pace. I don't know whether Doc needs to draw up a better game plan for getting guys open shots. I don't know if guys need to be more confident. I don't know what the exact solution is. I don't think this, if they keep playing this way, if they can hit, knock down those threes or get them up, I'm not so sure that's a recipe for winning coming deep in the playoffs.
Not at all, no. I think you'd hope that Seth Curry and Danny Green could chip in a little more there. I think it's been good that Curry probably over the last three or four games has generally looked a little bit more like himself, regardless of what the numbers say. I think he's seemed maybe like he's getting back into a rhythm a little bit, which is encouraging given what he's acknowledged about there have been lingering effects of COVID-19 for him. Part of it probably is roster construction, just in terms of Tobias Harris and Curry and Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey are all guys that shoot a high volume of mid-range attempts. You don't mind it at all with Embiid because he's making those at an incredibly high rate. But I think, there has to be more ways they can generate threes just out of, okay, Ben, you drive, you get to the paint, and then you kick out to one of our shooters. Or, okay, Joel, you draw a double team, and you swing it out to the perimeter, and then we, you know, find an open three-point look that way. There just has to be more diversity in the offense of the ways three-point shots are produced. So perhaps Doc Rivers will start to figure that out. You know, it's only, 28 games into his first season with this team. And I think he recognizes, though he's not playing this up as a massive issue, that it's something that they need to get better at. So I'm curious. It's definitely a trend worth tracking of whether they can have more success there and whether, as Rivers seems to think, it's something that will correspond to them just playing better defense and getting more transition opportunities through improved defense.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition makes WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Hey, Noah, I don't know if you've seen the latest odds over from our friends over at PointsBet. The Sixers, currently third and the best chances to win the Eastern Conference at plus 450. How are you feeling about that?
I think it's reasonable. It's hard to gauge the East right now, and there are a lot of teams a little bit below, you know, that top tier. But yeah, Milwaukee did recently have some struggles, you know, losing a few to weaker opposition. So it's hard to know kind of where they're at and where they will be at the end of the season. Something that did come to mind for me, though, when I saw this is I think a lot of these teams will be in play, you know, on the buyout market for veterans, and obviously will have the potential to try to make upgrades before this March trade deadline. The Sixers do, you know, have a slight advantage there in the sense that they have the majority of their taxpayer mid-level exception left. So perhaps Daryl Morey will be able to elevate them, you know, above where they are currently. But I think it's reasonable. Super, super hard to set odds for this third sort of thing, you know, at this stage in the season, I think.
Now, I think it's very reasonable, but like you said, it's hard because every team has had their shortcomings and downfalls. We see the Nets basically have no rim protection. They can't rebound. They struggle to play defense. But they have those three legitimate all-stars that can get a bucket anytime they want. I felt super great about the Sixers. However, this 1-3 road trip doesn't make me feel all that great. But I know a small sample size is a long season. But you got Milwaukee. I think the Heat are going to play better, even though they're not going to win the East. A lot of variables, buyout market, trade deadline. There's a lot to figure out still. So there's no clear-cut winner.
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess Milwaukee, you know, perhaps they're seen as a little bit more of a sure thing than the Sixers just because they've, won 60-plus games in recent seasons before. And Doc Rivers' first season on the job, new roster, perhaps, you know, the odds makers want to see a little more before – being confident that the Sixers are for real. And yeah, as you say, the Sixers have yet to prove that they're fully beyond their road struggles from last year. So yeah, we shall see.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, that four-game road trip is behind the Sixers. In the middle of it, Danny Green said the team needed a wake-up call. Then they went to Utah and lost. Was that the wake-up call you think he was calling for, or do you think something else is down the pipeline in the schedule for this team to wake up for what Danny Green is asking?
I think he was hopeful that the two losses that preceded it were the wake-up calls and that what would follow would be a motivated win against a Utah team that's been the best in the NBA so far and that a lot of people were expecting the Sixers to lose to. I don't know how much you can read into that loss just because it came without Joel Embiid, and I think that's a massive caveat whenever it's the case. But yeah, I think the Sixers returning to Wells Fargo Center, they will be hopeful that ends the skid and that they can beat a Houston team. I think that will be a fun matchup. I don't know if Danny Green's comments were intended to say that the Sixers' effort has been, you know, atrocious and that there's some massive, you know, underlying ill with this team. But I think he was spot on in saying that over the past few games, their execution over the course of, you know, a 48-minute game hasn't been super consistent, and that they would like to see that improve. So I thought the, if you're judging effort level, which is of course a subjective exercise, I thought it was good last night without Embiid. They hung in that game for a long time, despite the Jazz making a lot of tough threes, including big ones from Royce O'Neal of all people down the stretch. So I don't think you can fault the effort too much last night. I think there have been recent consistency issues. There have been recent defensive issues. There have been recent three-point volume issues. There have been recent bench issues. So yeah, there are problems with this team as of late that they will be hoping, as has been the case in recent years, just kind of magically go away when they return home. So really curious to see if that does indeed happen.
Well, six of their next eight games are here in Philadelphia. The only two on the road are back-to-backs against the Toronto Raptors. I don't know if Danny Green was talking to the team at large, the starters, the backups, the specific player. Every team has their shortcomings, their little holes, deficiencies. The championship teams find a way to clear it up or overcome it, come to playoffs and the finals. I will hope the Sixers can do that. The three-point, the bench, the ball sticking when it should be moving. I hope they overcome it. It's, yeah, that game against the Jazz, they didn't wake up like I think Danny Green would have liked them to, but six of the next eight games are at home. It's a perfect opportunity to bounce back, get on the right footing before the halfway point. Before we get out of here, Noah, anything you're working on the website?
Yeah, story that went up a little while ago on the Ben Simmons versus Rudy Gobert dynamic that we discussed a little, that I think is really interesting, and this notion of Simmons's increased aggression as of late and trying to parse what's exactly behind that, breaking down some of the numbers and all of that. So that is up recently on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com.
Go check out Noah's article at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. He's a great writer, 10 times better human being. Follow him on Twitter as well at NoahLevick.com. Noah, thanks for joining the pod. For Noah Levick, Danny Pommels, who's somewhere on vacation, nowhere near this snow and ice, I'm Ben Berry. This is the latest episode of Sixers Talk Podcast, presented to you by Wilmington University. Wherever you get your podcasts, rate, subscribe, give us 5 stars. Give us anything less, I'm going to think you're a hater. Peace.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.